How's your mental health? I'm listening with Luke Combs.
I am somebody who has struggled with anxiety a lot. A couple ways or tools, I guess you would say, to maintain my mental health is making myself aware to the things that I know I'm prone to. Information is key for things like that, and knowing what you're dealing with and how they operate. Being aware of the way your mind works in certain situations has been the most important thing for me.
More at imlistening.org. Talk saves lives.
We're pleased to welcome Sammy Levitt, who is part of our San Diego affiliate, 97.3 The Fan, and was at the ballpark for the opener of the NLCS, does pre and post for the Padres. So, Sammy, what were your impressions of game number one?
Not a lot of offense at all for either team. The problem for the Padres was that Yu Darvish was mostly terrific. He gave up three hits, but two of those were solo home runs, one to Bryce Harper and one to Kyle Schwarber. And on the offensive side of things for the Padres, they had only one hit. They didn't have a runner on second base until the ninth inning. And obviously it's hard to win games when you don't produce hits or runs. So one of those nights that offensively just nothing happened. Now I think there's certainly a tip of the cap to Zach Wheeler, what he did. But frustrating for the Padres tonight in the sense that Yu Darvish was actually really good, aside from giving up a couple of solo home runs. And you hope you can kind of work around that in a postseason game, but it didn't happen for the Padres offensively here tonight. And that was really the story of game one.
When I was listening to Jesse Agler close out this game, because I actually was listening to Padres radio the last few innings, I knew it, of course, because I've been watching the game, but to hear him say that the Padres have only had two runners on base in the first eight innings was really a stark reminder. Finished with just the one hit. Now, as you point out, Yu Darvish did his job very well because the Phillies didn't have that many opportunities with runners in scoring position or guys left on base either. But what did Bob Melvin and some of the Padres say about trying to generate offense and figure out how to break through?
Yeah, you know, Amy, I think it was pretty much, you know what, let's show up tomorrow and it's a new day. I mean, it was such an emotional, exciting, whatever adjective you want to use to describe it, what happened at Petco Park on Friday and Saturday as this team took down the Dodgers. You know, I don't know that what we saw tonight was a quote-unquote Dodger hangover, rather than the Padres running into a really good starting pitcher and just not having it offensively. But the sense we got from Bob Melvin and playing sounds from the clubhouse on our post-game show was that there was the mindset of, hey, it's one game. And I agree with that. I mean, you know, obviously it sets up a very crucial game two coming up, and it's a bit of a weird schedule with local time tomorrow, well, now today. The game's at 1:35, so by 5 p.m. local time tomorrow, you know, the Padres could be down 0-2 in this series going back to Philadelphia. So a lot's going to happen in the next half day or so by the time we get to the early evening tomorrow. But it should be really interesting. But the sense I got really was, it was kind of, okay, we lost one, and let's go back and get him tomorrow. And obviously it sets up a very, very important game, too, especially for San Diego.
I could not believe, even going back and looking at the numbers, that the three Phillies pitchers only threw 109 pitches total.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, you want to talk about economical. You can't get much more efficient than that.
No, you can't. And I was, you know, pretty surprised that Zach Wheeler came out after 83 pitches. You know, he was cruising. I mean, you know, like we've been talking about, he allowed a walk, a single, that was it. He didn't have a runner in scoring position against them the entire outing. So I was pretty surprised when Wheeler came out. Sir Anthony Dominguez came in for the eighth inning, did a good job. And then it was Jose Alvarado in the ninth. And the Padres finally had a little rally and had a good opportunity. He had the winning run at the plate and Manny Machado with one out. He flies out to right field. Josh Bell strikes out, and that's the ball game. But really, on both sides, pitching-wise, it was really impressive. I mean, Darvish was good aside from the two solo home runs. And the Padres' bullpen, which has been a massive strength for them in this postseason, again, two scoreless innings. So I think, to me, that's what's frustrating about this game one, beyond just chalking it up to an offense that didn't do anything tonight. The fact that they pitched really well, this was a winnable game, you know, if you score a few runs, but it just didn't happen. But you're right, on the Philly side of things, between Wheeler and the two guys out of the bullpen, it was very efficient and impressive.
Sammy, what was your perspective on the Kyle Schwarber home run?
I was in the press box at that time. I heard the crack of the bat. I looked up and I said, whoa. And then it ends up landing in the second deck. Now, this is my first year with the Padres, so I did not know that was the longest home run ever hit at Petco Park.
Oh, my gosh.
I know some people around me said, I don't think I've ever seen a ball hit into the second deck in right field. And then when we got the number of 488 and then found that it was the farthest home run ever in the history of the stadium, it all kind of made sense. I think there were a lot of people there tonight, and I can't say for sure if nobody's ever done it, although I would assume, considering where it went, but I won't go out on a limb because I don't know. But I think the great majority of people there tonight did not think it was possible to get one into the second deck, because that deck's pretty far back. You know, kind of if you just look at the way right field is laid out. So I knew it was far. I did not know it was 488, but it was quite the blast. Yeah.
I mean, I'm trying to remember who was. Maybe Zach Wheeler was the one who said that he'd never even seen a BP ball hit that far.
No. And not only was it 488, it was 119.7 miles an hour off the bat.
Whoa.
It was pretty impressive. Yeah.
Really. Sammy Levitt is with us from San Diego. 97.3 is our affiliate there. And he's also part of the Padres Radio Network doing the pre and post. Before we talk about the pitching, Sammy, I'd love to hear what this playoff run has meant to San Diego sports fans so far. And the atmosphere has been evident even on TV, but you're right in the middle of it. What's it been like for these fans to see their team kind of revived and taking out the big bad Dodgers along the way?
It's been extremely special. I mean, I said it to a few people earlier today. You know, I've seen a lot of baseball games. You know, I grew up in New York and went to lots of Mets playoff games as a fan, and I've been fortunate to be at some big college football games and basketball games, and it may have been the best sporting event I've been to Saturday night, especially at Petco Park. Yeah, it's been an extremely special run, I think, for a variety of different reasons. Number one, here in San Diego, you know, there have not been many seasons of success. I mean, you said it earlier, right? The team's first NLCS since 1998, same year they went to the World Series. But this team, this organization, this fan base has really been revitalized. And I think it starts at the top, you know, with the owner, Peter Seiber, who's really committed to spending and trying to win. A.J. Preller, who continues to be aggressive. You know, a great example is what he did at the trade deadline with the Juan Soto move. They spend money. The organization in really every aspect, I think, is really impressive. And the fans have responded to it. I mean, they set a record for sellouts in the regular season this year. So that was well before this playoff run. It was very up and down regular season with highs and lows and big trades and some drama with the Fernando Tatis Jr. situation. I mean, there were all kinds of aspects to the regular season. But people showed up, and I quite honestly, Amy, I've been blown away by the support here all year. And then it really hit a crescendo over the weekend, and the Dodgers in town, and they win game two in L.A. Then that's after what was a really impressive wild card series win in New York, which a lot of people didn't think they would do. Then they win game two in L.A. They come home Friday night. The place is rocking. They get just enough offense, some great pitching. And then Saturday, they're in game four. They're trailing 3-0 in the seventh inning, and they erupt. And, I mean, the place was just rocking. It's raining. People are dancing. People are singing. I really hadn't seen anything like it. And I think, Amy, no matter how this run ultimately ends, I think there will be a sense of satisfaction for beating the Dodgers and feeling like the next step has been taken. And I'm really excited to see what's ahead for this city, for this organization. There's just a lot of really good things going on and a lot of commitment to winning that I think bodes really well for this team and for this fan base. And the fans have really responded to it.
You mentioned the Fernando Tatis. That was all about the same time as the lineup was changed drastically with the moves that were made at the trade deadline. And it was a bit of a head scratcher for a couple of weeks because it didn't seem to gel, or at the very least, the production wasn't there. Sammy, what did it take? How did they get to the point where, okay, moving forward again, and then a bit of a meteoric rise into the playoffs and now obviously into the NLCS?
Yeah, it was a very up and down experience after the trade deadline. You know, I think a lot of people here thought that the moves would really propel this team. And, you know, Amy, I don't think in the regular season they ever got super hot. You know, they didn't have a win streak of more than, I want to say, 5 games. It could be 6. I'm forgetting now. I knew this better during the regular season. it's either 5 or 6. But here at past midnight on the West Coast, I'm forgetting. But it's 5 or 6. You know, they never had reeled off 10 straight wins or 13 out of 14. It just didn't happen, and that still was true after they made the trade deadline deals. Now they had a really bad loss in Arizona in September, and there was kind of this moment and address that Bob Melvin had of the team where he got angry. And it was something, you know, Bob Melvin's a very steady personality, steady manager, and I think he deserves a lot of credit for what's happened here over the past couple of weeks and the success they've had in the postseason. He's done a great job. But when he got angry at the team, I think a lot of players took notice, and there was a players-only meeting the next day, and from that point on, they finished 11-7 in the regular season. Again, not super hot, but playing some good baseball. And Amy, it has really come together, you know, in the postseason. You know, again, it was a very up and down kind of year. I think even into September and into the final homestand, but this team really came together in New York with what they did. They really came together with what they did against the Dodgers, and I think they've played their best baseball in the postseason, which is obviously what you want to do. And
yes,
the Phillies right now are doing it as well, which makes this such an intriguing series. But a lot of players have pointed to that night in Arizona in September when Bob Melvin addressed the team as a moment where they really started to come together, and that's been a pretty consistent answer. So when you talk about turning points, that night in Arizona after they had a really bad loss in a series opener, that seems to be the consensus about when this team could kind of feel the turning point.
How have you seen Manny Machado step into a role where he is a leader in the clubhouse? And yes, Bob Melvin has had a massive impact, but what about Manny?
He's been terrific. I mean, he's a tremendous player, and this is my first year, you know, watching Manny day in, day out, and seeing every at bat he has, and he's just remarkably consistent. You know, he had an ankle injury that he suffered on Father's Day in Colorado. Really, aside from about a month span where he struggled after that, he kind of, you know, came back quickly, was playing through it, and it took him a while to get right again. Aside from about a month span where his numbers dipped, I mean, he's been so consistent and so reliable. He's got a flair for the dramatic. He comes up with big hits. His defense, you know, it's either him or Nolan Arenado, the best defensive third baseman in baseball. Take your pick between those two guys. He's just remarkably consistent. And from an offensive standpoint, this was a very up-and-down team. You know, you talked about this team really not gelling after the trades. Well, part of that was the offense. I mean, their starting pitching has been very consistent for the most part all year. Offensively, they would go through stretches where it was just sort of inexplicable about as to why they couldn't score. So Manny's been the consistent part of it and truly carried this offense. Now, is he going to be the MVP? Who knows? You know, I get the sense that a lot of people aren't leaning that way. Maybe in a different year, maybe had he not got injured and the numbers were a little bit more impressive. Obviously, they already are impressive. But he's just, Amy, he's remarkably consistent, and he plays through injuries, and he's there every day, and he leads by example in that sense. So I've been really impressed with Manny Machado, what he's brought to this clubhouse through, again, some of the real ups and downs of this season and everything that's gone on.
Well, adversity and losing generally do force the leaders to step up, and he has been one of those guys that has shown truly what he's made of and also how much he cares. And I love the quote that you put on your Twitter, Sammy. We got to stay focused on what the real goal is, and it's to bring a championship to this city. That's from Manny Machado on the eve of the NLCS. All right, so last thing before I let you go, because as you point out, it's been a long day. You were at the ballpark for a lot of hours. How does the pitching stack up then for a long series?
For the Padres, it stacks up well. They got a great start from Yu Darvish tonight. Again, I think that's part of the frustration of tonight is Yu Darvish was Yu Darvish. I mean, he was really good, and you would like to think, I said this during my post game today, you would like to think that two solo home runs doesn't lose you the game, but it did tonight, and that's not Yu Darvish's fault. So he delivered tonight as he's done all year. Tomorrow, Blake Snell. Blake had a terrific second half. His start in New York in the wild card series was not good, but his start against the Dodgers was.
So it was.
What version of Blake Snell are you getting tomorrow? I guess to put it more broadly, I think the Padres have plenty of starting pitching. Their bullpen has been outstanding in the postseason. They've got Darvish and Snell and Musgrove, and they line up well for a long series, as do the Phillies with, what Wheeler did tonight and having Nola going tomorrow. From the pitching standpoint, I think the Padres are good enough to win a World Series. I really do, especially with what their bullpen is doing right now. Can they get there? We're going to find out. But, tonight, Yu Darvish did a great job. And the pitching side of things, both in the rotation and in the bullpen, has been one of, if not the key of this team's run here in the postseason. So I think pitching-wise, They can go to the World Series off what they've got, and we'll see how the rest of the series plays out.
First time in the NLCS since 1998, and Bob Melvin says they're already anxious to get back out there for game number two, which happens on Wednesday afternoon at Petco Park. You can follow Sammy on Twitter at Sammy L-E-V. Sammy Levitt with our San Diego affiliate, 97.3 The Fan. He's got the pre and post on Padres Radio. He's posted up at the ballpark these days. It's great to connect with you for the first time. Enjoy the ride, and thank you so much for the insight.
Absolutely, Amy. Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, I'm Thamie Redwood, host of the podcast Beyond Black History Month. Here's reason number 568 million of why you should be listening. From in-depth reporting on the shortage of black sperm to how one House of the Dragon star is dealing with online trolls who don't love seeing black dragon riders.
I can't lose sleep over that, over worrying about things that are beyond my control.
Listen and subscribe to Beyond Black History Month on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Hey, I'm Thamie Redwood, host of the podcast Beyond Black History Month. Here's reason number 568 million of why you should be listening. From in-depth reporting on the shortage of black sperm to how one House of the Dragon star is dealing with online trolls who don't love seeing black dragon riders.
I can't lose sleep over that, over worrying about things that are beyond my control.
Listen and subscribe to Beyond Black History Month on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.